All right, so you know, I'm trying to include more good news in the program. It's hard, right, Charles? Hard?
It's very hard.
Very hard. Okay. But there's some good things happening. And I want to talk about land that is being recovered from intense human damage. I want to start by looking at Sweden. And so there's a park in Sweden. It's called Söderåsen. Söderåsen? How do you say it? How's my Swedish? Söderåsen National Park. And it's 4,000 acres, and it was kind of reconstituted back in 2001. There had been all kinds of land use problems associated with it for over 600 years, back in the 18th century, 19th century. It was largely deforested. There was burning of the shrubbery and whatnot to increase grazing grounds. And now it's this beautiful hardwood forest, beech trees. Not just be I'm not even sure what else they got there, but it's just this beautiful spot. It's become actually it could be now the challenge is so many people want to visit it, camp at it, a hike through it, you know, take photos there, just absorb the magic of it, that you know it's hard to manage that. And I'm reminded of closer to home, the Boundary Waters. If folks around the country listening to this program aren't familiar with the Boundary Waters, this is a region of the northern United States, Minnesota and Ontario. Again, the lake soon to be called Lake America, right?
Oh, man,
No, I didn't mean that. I didn't bring that up. So anyway, there are, I can't remember how many lakes in the Boundary Waters. It's literally thousands of lakes. And some of them flow one into the other. Some of them involve a portage, but it is the most
I've done that.
wild.
I've actually portaged a
Yeah,
canoe through the Boundary Waters.
it's wild. It's a huge area, hundreds and hundreds of miles. I mean, you can travel a long ways from one end to the other. It's dark at night. You see stars. You don't hear. I mean, if you hear an airplane, it's way the heck up there at 30,000 feet. It's fantastic. And
And that plane, if they know you're a Democrat, drop stool on you.
well, that's only one of Trump's dreams slash memes. Anyway, no, it's it
Well,
you
you're
know,
from Minnesota, so that
yeah, that's even worse.
they assume you're
And if
not
you're on the
plugged
Canadian
in.
side, it's even worse, right?
That's all right.
But no, it is an absolutely sensational place. And it
It is
also,
beautiful.
I
It
should add,
absolutely is.
unlike the forest in Sweden I'm talking about, which has gone from devastated landscape to incredibly beautiful preserve in what, 20 something years, 25 years. The Boundary Waters is another place that Trump is targeting for some types of development, allowing more boats in there, possibly allowing some kind of mining. And he's doing this to our
Is
natural
he
areas
handing
all over
that
the
off
country.
to Jared Kushner?
Jared Kushner, maybe, yeah.
Since he and Ivanka are big development
Well, they're
feeds.
really focused on their island off the coast of
I'm
Albania,
not sure
so
that's happening. So maybe he's going to give him the Boundary Waters.
Yeah, give them the Boundary Waters instead. But you know, so it's it, you know, we should be paying attention to what other countries are doing to preserve land, to recover land. You know, I mean, some of these places in the U.S. are pristine; they've never been developed, and you know, I would hate to see them fall victim to developers' dreams at the expense of the natural beauty that it really what draws
Well,
people there.
I would, kind of going back to what we talked about with the Canadian tariffs. There's a price to pay if you're going to re if you're going to replicate the system, the external system from which we've benefited, where essentially we've, had the Canadians and the Chinese become, manufacturing areas for the United States, which are remote to the United States. You bring all that back, you're going to have to do a lot of things and develop a lot of land
Well, just
and also figure out where you're going to get the water and
but
all this for
you don't
this.
need yeah that for sure. But you don't need to develop new land. There's already so much decayed land around that used to have, you know. I mean,
Well, yeah,
look
I
at
mean, you
Alec
could
Keefe in
move everything
Pennsylvania.
into, the depopulated portion of Detroit, although Detroit actually made quite a
Yeah, I
renaissance.
know Detroit has done a pretty
But they
amazing
wouldn't do
job.
it because, Detroit is a majority minority city, so of course, it would have to be somewhere down south.
So let's move from Sweden down to Africa. Burkina Faso. Do you know where Burkina Faso is?
I have to say I don't.
Oh, it's on the west coast of Africa.
Okay.
Okay, God. Anyway, there's a gentleman, a farmer actually, called named Jakuba Sawadogo. And
is he Swedish too?
No, it's a good guess though. But his there's a movie called The Man Who Stopped the Desert. Not The Man Who Stopped Dessert. The Man Who Stopped the Desert. And he has spent a long time, decades in fact, addressing the problem of desertification in the African Sahel. And again, he got his village working together, planting trees, and now that those trees are a forest. And there was a long dry spell years ago that, along with overgrazing, bad farming practices, too many people in one spot there, that had been really causing problems in the northern part of Burkina Faso. And this effort, they didn't do it with big backhoes and machinery. They did it with basic old-fashioned tools. And they just started using old farming practices that have been in Burkina Faso, there we go, for a long time. And gradually that desertified land, that barren land, they transformed it into a fairly substantial forest that involves 96 different tree species, 66 different plant species, some of which are edible, some of which are medicinal, and also, habitat for animals, birds, whatnot. And so, they took an area that was unusable and unfriendly, not just to human life, but to plant and animal life, and they've made it functional. They've made it a great place again. Mm-hmm. And they did it in a lot of ways just by going back to the simple old-fashioned techniques that worked for centuries. So, yeah. And maybe you've heard
this. I'm sorry, just for a second. Okay. I mean, I don't know. I can't get my mind off this. You're reading. Because you're reading about they have a number of animals in
yes.
this African country.
Yes.
I'm thinking
no
about.
No kangaroos, sorry. You want to eat kangaroos, don't
That's
you?
That's what I'm thinking about. They brought the kangaroos there.
Well, yeah.
Noah's Ark dropped them off.
Noah's Ark didn't have to drop the kangaroos off. They jumped off board as soon as they had a chance.
Sorry. I know you're trying to make it, at least it's good news. That's why it's fun to laugh at.
Yeah. Well, we laugh at bad news, too.
We
do. So here we are, yeah.
Yeah, we do have a
sense. So, okay, moving further south in the African continent. You know where Zimbabwe is, Doctor?
Yes,
I do. All right, so in Zimbabwe, and you maybe have heard of Alan Savory.
The name seems familiar, but I don't know why.
He's maybe more famous because he's from Zimbabwe, mm-hmm. and he is for decades now practiced a technique to address desertification by using herds of livestock the way herds of animals would have been used historically.
Yeah,
they move around and right. they have plenty of room to move.
And different the livestock eat different parts of plants so that you can actually dual graze.
Well, yeah, if you have cattle grazing on ground where there's too many cattle and not enough grass, they're gonna tear up. Mm-hmm. They're gonna tear down too deep into that grass,
right?
And it won't regenerate. But if you move them around, mm-hmm. If you move them from paddock to paddock, you won't have that problem.
And also, they're laying their own fertilizer down for the.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, so this is just common sense, natural based management that has allowed Savory, to improve into basically take land that had become desertified, and move it back into, a functional ecosystem. So anyway. Speaking of functional, let's go the opposite direction. Phoenix.
You mean that they got the bad part? Well, they got the result of a deal they made a long time ago, which is they're going to be the first major city in the Southwest to use a lot less water.
And this is just out too. I mean, yeah. the Central Arizona Project, billions of bucks in federal money made this possible. What? How many decades ago was it? It was a while ago. I think 40 years ago maybe.
Yeah.
And now, because of the deepening drought and the decreasing water levels of Lake Mead and Lake Powell, and you got what, 8 states that fight over water from the Colorado River. And interestingly, perhaps not surprisingly, the Trump administration, they're taking charge because state government is just an afterthought anymore, right? They're taking charge of how to divide up the water. And interestingly, in the Trump proposal, three downriver states, Arizona, California, and Nevada, oh, wait, those are all, quote, blue states.
Mm-hmm.
What a coincidence. They would probably shoulder most of the challenges.
Do you really think Arizona is a blue state? I mean, yes, yeah. It has a lot of their
And I think Stephen officials. Miller knows that.
Well, but, you know, the legislature there is not a Democratic legislature. There's a lot of people
It's shifting,
from outside Maricopa County who do...
Yeah, but it's shifting more and more to the Democratic column.
It seems like it.
Yeah. And, I mean, it just... But even beyond politics, Phoenix was always a bad idea. at that size and scale.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this deal that gave them all this water 40 years ago, whatever it was, you know, that's helped their agriculture. It's helped their industry. And it's temporary. You know, people who were even involved with negotiating it back then knew that it was going to be a temporary thing. Because
mm-hmm.
they knew the organic nutrient was someday going to hit the fan. And it's hitting the fan.
Yeah.
So... One other place, Charles, where things are happening just right, Birds and Bees Urban Farm here in Des Moines.
What's happening on Birds and Bees?
Well, my wife, Kathy, came up with this idea years ago, and because we've been gardening for our subsistence, you know. Mm. We're basically the little row house on the prairie. you know, Laura Engler's Wilder, in the city.
With the apartment building next door.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. So that increases our challenges too.
That's
right,
because the sun doesn't get down here.
Laura Ingalls Wilder had it a lot easier than us.
That's true.
But anyway, we've taken a piece of property. It's a small holding, but we've made it just a great place for us to grow food to eat. But of course, if it's tasty, we're not the only ones that are going to want to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
We had a rabbit here. The rabbit has disappeared, by the way. I'm pretty sure the owl I hear at night has probably made a meal out of that rabbit.
Uh-huh.
That's okay. But we have squirrels galore. We have sparrow. I think sparrows dug up more than half of the wheat seed we planted in one of our beds as a cover crop.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we all...
So now it's an undercover crop.
Well, it's a partial cover crop. It's not undercover crop. No, we have a flea beetle problem sometimes. Sometimes we have spider mites.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fortunately, we haven't had Japanese beetle problems, but when you have a, basically, we've created a little bit of an oasis. And it's probably easier to do that in Iowa. But, you know, anyway,
Have a hard time doing it in Phoenix.
Yeah, you will. A heck of a time. Yeah. Hey, folks, Charles Goldman's been with me here, folks.